are listening to the Fifth Down Podcast, football for fans, by fans.
Adam Glass and Ryan Jones bringing you all the action from week two in the NFL. Lots to go over from this past weekend in football and everything going on around the NFL. Before we get into that, as always, follow us on Twitter. We're at Fifth Down NFL. Like us on Facebook, it's facebook.com/fifthdownpodcast. And check out the owner website, it's thefifthdown.org. Find all of our latest podcasts, any blogs throughout the week, any questions, comments. If you like what you see, if you enjoy what you hear on the show, please click the donate button. Say anything your way. We don't advertise on the show. We don't have anything along those lines, any sponsors, any advertisers on the actual podcast. But certainly everything does come with a price, so we certainly appreciate donations that you want to send our way. All right. The past week or so in the NFL, all that really has been talked about outside of the actual time frame of 1 p.m. and say Sunday night, all that's really been going on is all the talk with Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson and the domestic violence and the personal conduct and blah blah blah. I don't really want to talk about those two things specifically just because it's kind of like beating a dead horse. I do want to mention one thing about the Ray Rice incident, and then we'll talk about the Vikings, but football related. The Ray Rice incident I think is interesting just because what's come out as a result of Ray Rice and Adrian Peterson and Greg Hardy and Ray McDonald is now we're seeing sponsors and endorsers and these third-party companies coming out and publicly voicing their displeasure with the way the NFL is handling things. And we've seen something with Pepsi, with Radisson, who provides a lot of hotel accommodations for teams and staff and whatnot around the country. Pepsi, of course. We've seen some things with Nike along the lines of Adrian Peterson. And then the Anheuser-Busch one that came out today, which is probably the most eye-opening from a fan perspective as well as from the NFL perspective because of how much money there is on the table there. If you haven't read it or heard it on any of the various shows, I'll read it very briefly, the statement that Anheuser-Busch released publicly. Now, obviously, this isn't probably what was communicated to the NFL directly. What they released publicly was a statement saying, "We are disappointed and increasingly concerned by the recent incidents that have overshadowed this NFL season. We are not yet satisfied with the league's handling of behaviors that so clearly go against our own company culture and moral code. We have shared our concerns and expectations with the league." So you want to, on one hand, like applaud a company that large taking a stance and saying, oh, wow, they're really taking the high ground on something so much so that they're potentially threatening to pull out of their deal with the NFL. And you think about how much money is exchanges hands between bottling rights and pouring rights in the stadiums at NFL events and then the commercials. I mean, how many different segments do you watch? How many games can you possibly watch? I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. How many games do you watch and you see Budweiser after Bud Light after Budweiser after Bud Light after Bud Light Lime and Margarita and everything else? It's just one after another of commercials which are provided by Anheuser-Busch. Super Bowl, Sunday Night Football, Monday Night Football, middle of the day, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's one of the biggest advertisers and one of the biggest moneymakers in terms of stadium revenue, in terms of concessions. So you have that side going for you. Are they really willing to pull out and whatnot? And then we see that Arian Foster kind of went on Twitter and said something in response to that. And I thought that was very interesting. What he said was, "Selling poison on that high horse, domestic violence and alcohol, damn near synonyms." And I thought that was very interesting. So Anheuser-Busch wants to come out and basically say that they're displeased with how the NFL is handling this, and this goes against their moral code, blah, blah, blah. But what are the numbers, what are the statistics in terms of domestic violence issues and alcohol consumption?
I'm pretty sure they got to be go hand in hand, right? I mean,
right. Now you can say drink responsibly, don't drink and drive, blah, blah, blah. But really, that's not the message. I mean, it was a good article put out by Mike Florio on Pro Football Talk, which kind of highlighted what I'm talking about now, was that, I mean, the alcohol companies, cigarette companies, all these companies, they put out disclaimers, sure, but that's not their message. Their message, the commercial doesn't begin with drink responsibly and end with drink responsibly. It has their message, it has their gimmick, whatever it happens to be, and at the end, there's a tiny little disclaimer at the bottom saying, please drink responsibly, or a little fast disclaimer by a voiceover saying, please drink responsibly. But that's not the message. And so when the Ray Rice incident happens, I mean, the reports are that he and his fiancée at the time were both intoxicated at the time. I mean, they have to be responsible for their own actions and their own consumption, but at the same time, alcohol still plays a part. And you're telling me that your own moral code is to not be involved with anything, with a brand that has to do with allowing somebody to continue to play because of actions that occurred while they were intoxicated, potentially on a product in which you sell. Like, there's definitely some kind of hypocrisy going on there.
No, there's no some kind of hypocrisy. It's the usual hypocrisy. Look, on one hand, I get it, right? Because as a company, you don't want to be seen as the guys that are endorsing someone who's, you know, some questionable activities, you know, even though it's all off the field. And, you know, if you ask me, you know, it's all this happened, you know, in this private time, you know, with him and his wife. I mean, am I saying he should, that, you know, it was a good, that, you know, am I condoning it? No, definitely not. I mean, whatever. But, I mean, you're right. I mean, for all the crap that they're spilling out there, I mean, I mean, half the reason why half of this crap happens is because of alcohol, the same crap that they sell. It's just like the cigarette companies with their, you know, with their promotion of, you know, helping people quit smoking. Like, come on, we all know they're full of crap. They're just doing that because they're trying to get some good PR points, not because they actually want people to do anything about it. You know, it's kind of like the legal disclaimer is just to make some lawyer somewhere happy.
Right. So, hypothetically, if Ray Rice, Greg Hardy, and Adrian Peterson were to step on the field this next Sunday and play football, do you think that Anheuser-Busch would legitimately consider pulling out of their partnership with the NFL, or do you think they're just trying to put this message out there to the public to try to improve their PR image and make it seem like they're still this high moral company and blah, blah, blah?
I don't think they're going to pull. They make... look, yes, we know we know essentially the NFL is the one making money off the deal, right? They pay them for the right, basically, to advertise, more or less. But let's face it.
But they also pay for the exclusive pouring rights at NFL games. So you go to most NFL stadiums and it's Anheuser-Busch products. It's not Coors Miller.
Right.
So they're paying for that exclusivity, and at $12 a pop, they're making some serious money off of it, and you know that they're getting a discount on their advertising dollars in terms of commercials and signage and things of that nature.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think they just pull out hot air. Like, it's one of those things. So, okay, look, let's look back. It was a couple of years ago with the whole Tiger Woods thing, right? All of a sudden, everyone is, you know, all his sponsors pretty much, you know, they're up in arms, they dropped him, all this other crap. And why is this? Because they just don't want to be associated with the bad publicity. That's the only reason. I guarantee you, if Ray Rice gets reinstated and he gets picked up by a team and that team wins the Super Bowl, he'll be, you know, on the cover, on their commercials, and all this other crap like nothing happened. I mean, it's just more corporate BS.
Probably true. So if he is reinstated, do you think somebody picks him up? Or do you think that, like, no team wants to go near him for a few weeks?
No, he'll get picked up almost right away.
Interesting.
I don't think he's good enough that he deserves an honor like that. But I think there are enough teams right now in the league that are having running back issues that, you know, he's you know, whatever, he's getting up there, right, a little bit, but he can certainly still do the job.
You know. He's certainly declining. He was no longer really, I mean, he was still the feature back for the Ravens, but he wasn't necessarily the workhorse anymore. He's not the the top five running back that he was a few years ago, but he's still a legitimate player. I agree on the Anheuser-Busch thing. I think they're really just trying to improve their PR image and make it seem like they're taking the high ground. They don't want backlash against them saying, oh, well, he was intoxicated at the time, and you sell your product at these games and to these people, so you're culpable to a certain extent. So I think it's just them trying to improve their PR image. In terms of Ray Rice, I think that he has a legitimate chance of being reinstated, whether the NFL likes it or not, just because of the players' union. I don't think the players' union wants him reinstated, but I think that just in terms of due process and the legality of it, they have to represent him fairly. They have to try his case fairly and impartially. And I think that he does, they do make a good case for double jeopardy, and there's a good chance he will be reinstated. He just becomes a free agent. Like, I really don't see a team signing him until at minimum halfway through the season. If all this blows over, if everybody's satisfied with, say, the AP and Greg Hardy and everything else, if everybody's satisfied with the outcome of those situations, then maybe 6, 7, 8 weeks from now somebody gives Ray Rice a shot, but I don't see it happening right away.
Yeah,
nobody wants that PR disaster.
So here's a problem, though. For a guy like Ray Rice, time off the field is money, there's money out of his pocket. Now, that's so that's true for everybody, you know. But it's more true for him than for other fans.
I mean, I guess that's true, but I mean, you can look at guys like Chad Ochocinco and Troy Owens. I mean, they had plenty of time off the field because of their antics. Even Randy Moss, plenty of time off the field because of their antics and whatever it happens to be. I mean, obviously domestic violence is something a little different than the shenanigans that those guys were up to with the attitude that Randy Moss had, but it's still money out of their pocket. These guys, they find ways to make money, or if they had any kind of a brain, they were stashing it away. All right. Let's go, not necessarily to Adrian Peterson's issues, but to the Vikings and Adrian Peterson's tenure with them. Forgetting about the off-field issue, focusing on the football side of things. Like I said, his future in the NFL and as a member of the Vikings. Peterson starting, let's say hypothetically he suspended the remainder of the season. I don't think that'll be true. I think he'll get 6 games, 8 games, whatever it happens to be. So let's say he's either suspended or he plays the remainder of the season fine. He'll be 30 going into next season with over 2,000 carries and 10,000 yards worth of mileage on him. He will have $43.25 million due to him over the next 3 years, 12.75, 14.75, and 15.75 in 2015, 16, and 17, respectively. For a guy at that age, with that much wear and tear, at that price point, the Vikings would be fools, I think, to keep him. I mean, if it wasn't for this, then yeah, you could say that he's AP, he's the face of the franchise, he's a once-in-a-lifetime type running back, and you can't get rid of him. But look, if you want to be competitive in this league, you have to manage your cap, you have to manage your dollars, and you can't put that much money into a running back, especially when you look at your depth chart and you got a guy like Matt Asiata, who this past weekend rushed 13 for 36, nothing great, caught 5 for 48, and a TD. Decent numbers, but you got that. Last season, he started in 2 games, rushed 44 times, 166 yards, and 3 touchdowns. So the guy can find the end zone. I think in the 3 or 4 games he's played in as the feature back, he's found the end zone almost every time. Maybe 1 game he didn't. So his rushing skills, along with rookie Jerick McKinnon, who is a speedy, cutting, slashing kind of make-you-miss back, I think the Vikings would be just as happy with the two of them in a tandem running the ball and then using that extra $10, $11 million a year to go out on free agency or to make some trades and pick up some big-name guys and do some different things and really put themselves in a position to be competitive. You can't lock that kind of money up into Adrian Peterson with a guy of his age with that much mileage. I just don't see him being a Viking past this season.
As much as I usually like to disagree with you on stuff like that, I agree, but I'm not sure I agree with you for that reason. I think the reason why he is essentially going to be done is more or less because of Well, I mean, you said it right. You said it because of his I think it's more because of his age than anything else. I think the dilemma that the Vikings have is the fact that he is still the only player that actually seems to be doing anything positive. He's the, when he's on the field, he's still a very large percentage of their offense. I mean, he's still the identity of the Vikings, and they don't have anyone to replace that kind of productivity. And for, you know, like you said, for his age, the mileage on the legs, the cap room, I mean, for all those things, I think for any other team, I think it's kind of like I think it would be like a no-brainer. But I mean, for the Vikings, I think it's always the other thing is too is I think it's always a bit of a tough call for small market teams like that, because those guys already don't make that much money, and having a franchise player like that for them to sell merchandising, I think they can't afford to lose that.
Right, and prior to this whole mess, I would agree with you about that he, even with diminishing skills, still pays for itself because of his name, his brand, and what he means to a small market. I mean, merchandise sales alone, things of that nature, signings, appearances, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it makes up for it when you have such a big, iconic name in a small market. But after this whole mess, nobody's buying his jersey anymore. I mean, you...
I would. Look, this is my... I will... Gonna have to edit the hell out of this. I would more quickly buy an Adrian Peterson jersey than I would buy, say, an Ndamukong Suh jersey. Why? Because, again, I think what someone does in their private life is what they do. Like, I'm not for beating the crap out of your kids. I mean, I say, you know, teach his own when it comes to discipline. I mean, you shouldn't be trying to knock them out or whatever. But whatever. But, you know, something like that, a private matter where it's just between him and his family. Who are we or the league or anyone to say, you know, how he should do? You know what I mean? Whereas someone like Sue, I feel like he's just a dirty player in general. You know, he's a dirty player on the field. He's a dirty player. You know, he celebrates the fact that he's a dirty player when he's in the media. I mean, that's the way I look at it.
All right. So as long as it's nothing too crazy and out there, the off the field issues just don't matter.
Look, these guys are ridiculously paid. Built like freaking monsters, and you know they spend 5, 6, 10 years of their lives getting beat in the head all the time. But after all that, they're still people. They still have lives. They still do their, you know what I mean. They're entitled to screw ups. They're entitled to make mistakes. They're entitled to do whatever stupidity they want to do. Look, if Ray Rice's name wasn't Ray Rice, and he wasn't a feature back for the Baltimore Ravens, if this video and this whole thing had gotten out, it would just be, oh, look, some dude knocked the crap out of his wife in an elevator.
I agree 100% with that.
So just because these guys have some sort of celebrity status, I don't believe that it shouldn't really make any justification, or whatever. Like, yes, okay, I see the point of, like, these guys need to be held to a higher standard because, you know, they have kids looking up to them, blah, 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 whatever, fine. But to punish, it's not even a case of just punishing people. You're punishing them in public to basically distance yourself and to make you and your organization look better. Right, when there's so much other crap that goes on within the league that they just kind of sweep under the rug, yeah, and don't pay any attention to that.
All right, let's move on from that. Big surprise here, RG3 is injured. This marks the third consecutive season in which the number two overall pick will miss playing time due to injury. And I'm sorry, third consecutive season. How many weeks? How many years has he been in the league?
3 years.
There you go. All right, Kirk Cousins comes in this past Sunday, and despite his opponent being the Jags, he basically lights it up. I mean, he didn't have Peyton Manning type numbers lighting it up, but he had Washington Redskins type numbers lighting up. He has a 500 record as a starter. More importantly, he looks comfortable in Jay Gruden's offense. I mean, that's something. They're both learning a new system. This is Jay Gruden's first year with the team, so it's not like he's had, like RG3's had more experience in the system or Cousins has. They're both learning at the same pace. He just happened to look comfortable in the system. It looks like it was built more so for him and his style of play. They were able to run a more balanced attack. He threw, I believe it was 33 times. They rushed 40 times. Bulk of the carries obviously going out for Morris. He seems to have come off the down year he had last year. Cousins converted half of his third down attempts. So that's a huge indication of being comfortable in a system, understanding your reach, understanding placement, yard, down and distance, all those things. So Cousins, while not like the end-all be-all of quarterbacks in this league, I mean, I wouldn't take him over Matt Stafford or Matt Ryan or any of the mid-tier guys, but I certainly think he's a very good quarterback. So my question is, if RG3 misses the entire season and the Skins go, say, 8-8 or better in a very difficult NFC, not NFC East, but NFC in general, should Cousins be the starter moving forward, or is there still just too much invested in RG3, in the brand RG3? Not just the player, but just the brand that they've made into him.
So move on from him. So I think it kind of puts them in a whole Michael Vick, Nick Cobb, what the hell is his name? Kevin Cobb. There you go. Kevin Cobb situation, right? But I think the difference...
That's
what I was going to say. So the difference there is that... in terms of all the crap marketing, PR, whatever, and just the pure monetary value of what they're paying him, you kind of have to stick with them. And the problem is I think in the end, I think he only at most he will get the 2015 season to prove his worth, and after that he becomes just another Jamarcus Russell, just another Vince Young. I mean. And the real question here is not how long he has as a starting quarterback. I think the question really is how long are the Washington fans going to stand for him still being a quarterback when Kirk Cousins is clearly the better option in that offense?
And that's kind of the problem, is like how long do you try to fit a square peg in a round hole? I mean, they have so much invested in terms of the 3 years of first round picks, the merchandise. I mean, obviously that doesn't matter to the team or to the owner because they've already made their money on that. But in terms of maintaining your fan base and packing the stadium and blah blah blah, especially when you have some controversy just surrounding your team in general and the naming and whatnot, the endorsements from RG3, which are nuts. I think he has Subway, he has a huge deal with, I believe it's Adidas. BT has a lot of different endorsements, and you know that the owners or the team of the NFL, somebody on the shield side of things gets a kickback from those endorsements. I don't care what the NFL wants to say publicly. Somebody's getting something on the back end from that stuff. So there's just so much invested in this guy from a financial and a media standpoint that it's like they're forced to try to make this thing work. And it's just I just don't see it ever happening. He just doesn't – he either doesn't fit the system or he just doesn't fit in the NFL. I mean, he's either too frail, his style doesn't work. I can't really pinpoint what it is, but I mean, obviously his body's not holding up. His body's not protecting.
No, I could tell you exactly what it is. It's the same thing we've been saying. The dude takes too many hits. Why does he take too many hits? Because he does not stay in the freaking pocket. And the funny part is this injury wasn't even because of a hit. This injury is because of he basically tripped over his own feet. That's the easiest way to describe it. And whose fault is that? Why? Because he was freaking running like a jackass instead of trusting his offensive line. I mean, come on. I think personally that the Redskins and everyone in that coaching staff is setting this kid up for failure in the end.
Well, I think that the Redskins didn't do right by him by hiring Jay Gruden in the first place. I mean, don't get me wrong, I like Jay Gruden. I think he's going to be a very good coach, and I like the system and what he brings to the league, but I just don't think that was the right fit for RG3. If you want RG3 to be your guy, you have to bring in a coaching staff. I mean, it's kind of this chicken and the egg conversation that we always have. Do you have the coach fit the player, or do you have players fit the coach? And that's kind of the problem. In the case of Washington, you had to have the coach fit the player. You have everything invested in this player. You have him set. You know who your starting quarterback is going to be unequivocally. You have to bring in a coach who's going to bring in a style that works with that quarterback. Or at the very least, have the quarterback sit in on the interviews and discuss what the schemes are going to be and see what the comfort level is. I mean, obviously, his going into only 2 years in the league, he's not afforded that kind of say from a hiring perspective, but at least have him in the room to kind of spitball things. And maybe they did, and we don't know that, but there has to be some kind of input, some kind of comfort level between a coach and a player when you know that that is your guy. And so out of all the head coaches hired this past offseason, I just don't see Jay Gruden as being the best fit for RG3. But we'll see. I personally think that Kirk Cousins is the better NFL quarterback, and I think he's going to have the longer, more successful career in the long run. It's just a matter of if it fits with the Redskins. Because if RG3 comes back next season and he's starting in favor of Cousins, despite how well Cousins possibly will play, then I say he demands a trade, or he just outright refuses to re-sign a contract with him because he'll be a free agent after next season. And if they're going to do him like that and treat him that way and say, well, look, you did great for us and you've won more games than you've lost and you've helped us build on our franchise and blah, blah, but we're still going to bench you in favor of this other guy, there's no way I would sign an extension with you. I'd say, okay, no problem. I'll sit on the bench and stay healthy, and I'm going to go collect my money next year from the New York Giants, who are going to need a quarterback because Eli Manning doesn't know what team he plays for anymore, and I'll see you on the other side. And so with that, let's go over to Eli Manning and New York Giants. Eli Manning is once again leading the NFL in interceptions. Dude definitely has some colorblind issues lately. And then once again, the Giants proved this past Sunday that they put the special in special teams. They allowed Ted Ginn Jr. to juke and jive his way to a touchdown on a punt return, missed tackles, just bad assignments, just horrible. He just made everybody look stupid. And then they cough it up on the ensuing kickoff and turn it over again. So just more stupidity on the special team side for the Giants, which has basically been their MO for a decade now. The defense had no answer for Drew Stanton.
I will argue this point. I will say that is not completely true, because he got his ass whooped by the Giants. What beat the Giants this game, and I will completely agree with you, there's no argument there, is the Giants beat themselves, as usual, in this game. The Ted Ginn Jr. thing, I mean, that was just whatever. I will start doing some swearing and be trying to keep it family friendly. but look, it's a simple matter of stupidity in numbers, right? So, case in point, right? You have Victor Cruz, got his paycheck.
Drop after drop after drop.
And you know what? Dropping the ball, whatever. You can say whatever you want. Okay, it happens. You're going to drop the ball. You're not going to be able to hold on to the ball every single time. Now, the drop.
Like
drop,
six drops no, a week after saying publicly, give me
yeah,
the ball.
Oh, yeah. I don't, you know, I could, you know, I can latch on to that, and I can even rant on that for like an hour. But this is my, I just want to say one thing about that whole thing. All that crap, the one catch that he absolutely freaking literally had to make, this is the one that he didn't make. I don't care if he dropped every other pass that game. The one pass, the pass that he got all that money to catch, he couldn't hold on to. That is what annoyed me. Defensively, I think the Giants played well. Their secondary held up pretty good. I think the offensive scheme was freaking smart. I mean, they picked on Patrick Peterson the entire game, basically.
They actually made him look like a average cornerback. I will admit that they did
Look, going into the fourth quarter, the game was the Giants. Yes, they only had a 1-point lead, but from the way they ended the first half to the way they played the third quarter, the game was theirs. They figured out the Cardinals. They had Drew Stanton. They sacked him, what, 4 or 5 times that game?
4 times.
Larry Fitzgerald, again, he caught passes. Let's face it, you're not going to stop a guy like that for a long period of time. But again, the damage that he did was relatively minimal, right? Their running offense was pretty successful. But again, it was managed damage, right? Like, yes, they got gashed for some big plays, but in the grand scheme of the game, those big plays up until the fourth quarter didn't really mean anything, right? Because it was still a low scoring game up until that point. Now the punt return for a touchdown and then the freaking fumble on the ensuing kickoff, those are the things that you cannot have happen ever.
Right, and you're right. Drew Stanton didn't exactly have great numbers. He was 14 for 29 for 167 yards, no TDs, no interceptions. Those aren't great numbers. If we're talking about anyone else in the league, we're going to say that person had a mediocre to poor day, especially only 167 yards in the air. But this is a guy who hasn't started a game since 2010, has never started a game for the Arizona Cardinals, and is coming in here basically with very, very little notice. It's not like he took a whole lot of first-team snaps in practice this past week. He took some because Palmer was still questionable. But that's why I say that Drew Stanton whooped you, because he managed the game against a defense that's supposed to be, on paper, one of the better defenses in the league, especially with the pickups that you guys had this past offseason via free agency. You do lose Walter Thurman, I believe, for the season, and Beason is now out for several weeks.
Yep.
So injury issues continue with G-men. Offensively, yeah, it's just a lot of drop passes, a lot of mistiming issues between the receivers and Eli. Yeah, bad decisions by Eli.
Which is more the same thing. But I say from a week-to-week perspective, I think they've actually shown a lot of improvement. My issue is the same issue I have. The same issue I have with them is the same issue I have with the Lions and even the Cardinals. Really, is on paper and on the field, you are whooping these guys. You can see the battles that you need to win, and they win them. The battles that they lose are the stupid ones that end up costing you the game. Like, I think more and more, especially in the NFC, I think it's gotten to a point where little stupid mistakes that normally would not make a difference in the grand scheme of things is what's costing teams these days. Yeah, which I think is a good thing, because it just means the competition is just that good.
Yeah, it was certainly getting to a level of parity in the NFL where, I mean, the adage any given Sunday really holds true. You don't know who's going to win. I mean, unless you're the Jags or the Raiders, it's almost a coin toss week to week with a lot of these teams. All right. Speaking of disappointments, the Jets start off this game against the Packers as total underdogs. Nobody gave them any chance to win this game. And for the first time in what feels like forever, I believe it was over a decade, the Jets scored a touchdown on their first 3 drives. They had this game in the bag. Their offense looked good. It was clicking. The defense had Rodgers uncomfortable. It was all there for the taking, and they had this 21-3 lead. And everybody's rejoicing, and we think, okay, we got this. We just got to hold steady. Everything's working on all sides of the ball. No problems. We're good. And then something happened. Like, somebody saw a sign in the crowd, and they remembered that they were the Jets. they let the Packers kick field goal after field goal to get back into the game. And then when it was finally within reach of one touchdown, they give up that touchdown. They stopped covering Jordy Nelson. They let him go for, like, nearly 190 yards, something like that. They lose their timing on offense, and you just see Decker with some big misses, some mistiming between him and Geno, just some bad decisions there. Geno throws an ill-advised pass that gets just like hung up in the air, and that's what gets picked off because Decker doesn't think enough to get in front of the defender. He stays behind him. Then Decker hurts his hamstring, so it's just all those things happen. The run game never really got going in that game because it didn't have to early on. They didn't need to run early on. They had this lead, and the passing game was working, and so they continued with that. And by the time they needed to just kind of burn some clock, they just couldn't get the run game going. And D. Milner was a complete disgrace. I mean, for this guy, for all the talk of him, the end of last season when he finally started to get together, to how he looked in preseason, and how much we needed him to get healthy to get back on the field. He was an absolute disgrace on that football field. Had no idea how to cover Jordy Nelson in any way. He got burned time and time again. Some stupidity forced them to use all their timeouts early, one just a few minutes into the third quarter because they couldn't get play calls in, they couldn't get lined up right, they couldn't get 17 people off the field. Just stupidity after stupidity. They get called for 12 men on the field to get to negate one. I believe that was a scoring play. Or no, they had the interception, they get negated. They pick off Aaron Rodgers, but that gets negated because 12 men on the field. And then the touchdown, the beautiful touchdown to Curley in the end zone, which would have tied the game, or put them ahead, I'm sorry. What was it? Tied the game, put them ahead. Whatever it was, gets negated because of this phantom timeout that never really existed, but kind of did because a player saw the offensive coordinator say timeout to the head coach who was supposed to call it, but it never actually happened. And yet somebody decided to blow the whistle after the play was snapped. And so it was just, it was something that can only happen to the Jets. Like, outside of maybe the Jaguars, there's no other team in football that something like that would happen to. It was heartbreaking and frustrating and depressing and laughable all at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even add anything to that. I mean, I think the Jets are just in a perpetual screw job every year. I mean, the one thing I can say is that that's pretty much kind of goes exactly what I was saying before, right? Where it's the stupidest things that cost you games.
And what's more frustrating is when you look at this as a Jets fan, when you look at the schedule early on, or when you look at the schedule at the beginning of the season and you make your wins and losses and whatnot, this was a game that was a loss. Most Jets fans would agree that, okay, we're supposed to lose the Packers game, no problem. And we accept that, and that's fine. But when you're up 21-3 and you're playing like the better team, it gives you this hope and it gives you this feeling that you can win, you can turn the season around, and you can be all the things that you thought you can be this year. And then they go and say, nope, we're still the Jets. We're going to lose this game. And now next week, you have to go and play the Chicago Bears on Monday Night Football and try to defend Alshon Jeffrey, Brandon Marshall, Martellus Bennett, and Matt Forte. It's just not going to happen. It's just not. If you couldn't contain Jordy Nelson, one receiver, you couldn't contain him, you are not going to contain the best 1-2 tandem in all football. In Marshall and Jeffrey, in my opinion. All right. So the Bears come back and they win on Sunday night against the Niners. Good comeback there. Let's see what else is going on around the week. Bills are 2-0. Are you buying it?
No. I think it's just going to be a matter of time.
All right. The Saints are 0-2. Are you buying it?
Very surprised.
Defense. Their defense is ranked 31st in points allowed, 32nd in passing yards allowed, 22nd in rushing yards allowed. So they are back to being the Saints of a couple years ago where they're just disregarding the fact that they have to play 11 guys on the other side of the ball. Now, Sean Payton was seen yelling at defensive coordinator Rob Ryan on the sidelines during the Browns' final drive, which we will talk about in a second because it was a thing of beauty. Moving forward, are we moving towards a split with Rob Ryan, or you think they'll get it worked out and he'll still remain their defensive coordinator?
I think Rob Ryan is essentially, I think he's going to be one of those guys that you're either going to love or you're going to hate. And I think until he finds the team that's more of a fit for him. I think he's going to keep having these problems.
I think he's running out of teams to try to fit with. He's been defensive coordinator for the Browns, the Cowboys, and now the Saints, all within the past, I think, 5 years he's been with those three teams. So if he, normally the progression of a coach is you work your way up to defensive coordinator and then you want to work for a head coaching spot. He has yet to get an interview for a head coaching spot. And if he loses another defensive coordinator job, I just don't see him getting another one. He'll have to go back to linebackers coach or something in that of that nature and prove himself once more. I do like Rob Ryan, but it doesn't seem to be a good fit. In his defense, he has become defensive coordinator of some really lousy defenses. It's not like he's ever inherited a pretty decent job or a team that's defensively driven. I mean, you look at the Browns and they're a disaster, and you look at the Cowboys and they're an offensive team, and the Saints, you really don't get much more offensive than that, at least in the Drew Brees era. So he certainly inherited his challenges. Now, Saints were marginally better last year. I don't know what's going on this year. They'll certainly right the ship. Hopefully it won't be too late, because they do play in a very competitive division in the NFC South. The Panthers look like they're no joke. Bucks are a tough team. They're not a playoff team, but they're a tough team. And then the Falcons look like they've gotten themselves back on track after an off year last year. We mentioned the Browns just a minute ago. Well, I want to talk about them for just a second. They lose on the last second field goal week one against the Steelers, nice division opponent, and then they win on a field goal week two against the Saints, a team that nobody expected them to beat. The Brian Hoyerwood Browns are 1-1. Hoyer is now 4-1 as the starter of the Cleveland Browns. Probably the best winning percentage in our lifetime for a Cleveland Browns quarterback, and probably the longest tenure for a quarterback for the Cleveland Browns at this point. 5 games is a long time to play quarterback for the Browns. At the end of this game, Hoyer led the team on a 14-play, 85-yard drive to put them in scoring position to win by the field goal. Numbers were on crazy, 24 for 40, 250 yards, 1 TD, and 30 rushes behind him. So nothing crazy, but look, Brian Hoyer is managing the game. He's putting his team in position to win. He's leading his team in all the ways that matter, tangible and intangible. And he's doing it with nobodies. I mean, for all the knocks we put on the Jets last season with their lack of weapons on offense, who's on the Browns? His running backs are Terrence West and Isaiah Crowell. They're rookies. His top receivers are Andrew Hawkins and Miles Austin. I mean, that's not a great group of guys to carry the rock and catch the rock. It's really not. So imagine what this guy would be able to do when he has a completely healthy team, when he has Josh Gordon back, when they invest a little bit more, a couple more draft picks or money in free agency with some bigger weapons. I mean, they've built a good defense and they're starting to build a good offense. I think the Brian Hoyerwood Browns are something that really you can build on. So what do you do if Hoyer continues to move this team in the right direction and put them in a position to make a run at, say, a wild card spot this year? I mean, are we sticking with the Brian? It's kind of similar to what we're talking about with the Redskins. I mean, do we stick with Brian Hoyer because something is finally working in Cleveland, or and just make Johnny Arena football?
Look, I think so. Look, I don't care. At some point, my policy is you just got to stick with the hot hand. Even if you just use Hoyer till the end of the season, then you trade him for like a fourth or maybe like a fifth, probably like a sixth round or something. You stick with the hot hand. I mean, you'd be kind of stupid not to. Now, that's my opinion.
So stick with Brian Hoyer and trade Johnny.
No, I mean, look. I think deep down in this organization, they believe that Manziel is their face the future. He's their franchise guy.
Right. So, absolutely.
Right. So, but right now Hoyer is doing well. Right. So,
but they also believe that at the general manager position and above, probably. I don't think they believe that at the head coach and below. I don't think coaching staff, the guys that are hands-on with the team, I don't think they believe in a Manziel-led future. I think the business side of things believes in Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, you're probably right. But either way, what's going to end up happening is Hoyer's going to get traded at the end of the season. is going to be the whole Kevin Cobb thing again. He's going to get traded, and, you know, Kevin Cobb, Matt Cassel, insert backup who wasn't supposed to be a starter, but ended up playing well enough to keep the starting job. I mean,
Matt Cassel thanked his old team this past weekend for making him a starting quarterback.
Yeah.
Through, what, 4 or 5 interceptions against Patriots? That was basically, yep. Here you go, guys. Thanks for the career. All right. Colts are 0-2. Surprised?
Very. Actually, more like disappointed.
Who's the better 0-2 team, the Saints or the Colts?
Oh, geez. Probably the Saints. I'm sorry. I'm slip. Well, Freudian slip on that one. Probably the Colts. I think the Colts are out of the two. I think the Colts are probably the closest to a balanced team that those, between those guys.
Yeah, I would say that too. What's interesting is the Colts actually ran one of the more balanced offenses that they've ever run under Andrew Luck this past Sunday, and they lost in terms of passing and rushing. This is one of the first times where Andrew Luck didn't throw the ball like 112 times this game. They actually had somewhat of a balanced attack, and they ended up losing. Just kind of goes to show how talented Philadelphia really is, and also how much they do rely on Andrew Luck's arm and his skill set. I certainly think they're going to right the ship, and they're going to win that division outright, even though they're a couple games behind Texans already. It's still too early for anything like that. All right, let's get into some picks for next week. Thursday Night Football is in a couple of days. Thursday Night Football is Buccaneers at Falcons. Decent divisional matchup. I mean, something that seems like it's made for Thursday night. It's nothing great. It's nothing to snooze at. Should be a decent game. I got Atlanta, and you are taking the Bucs.
Yeah, a long shot. I roll the dice on that one. I just think Atlanta kind of lost whatever mojo they had going for two seasons prior, and until they find it back, I think even a team like the Bucs have a very good chance of beating them.
I look at Atlanta, and I think that last year was a fluke. I think they're definitely riding the ship. I mean, I know it's only 2 games. Matt Ryan's leading the league right now in yardage. He's at almost 700 yards throwing. Julio Jones is number 4 in the league in terms of receiving yards. He has over 200. Paul Worrell is leading the league in tackles. So they have some talent on that team. Guys are performing up to their names. I think Atlanta is certainly the team that they were a couple of seasons ago. I do feel bad for a guy by the name of Tony Gonzalez that he's not part of this team if they're able to make a run for things the way they would have hoped to last year.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
Alright, kicking off Sunday, 1 o'clock, Chargers at the Bills. We both have the Chargers on that one. Cowboys at the Rams. I think this is the first time in history we both are taking the Cowboys in a game.
Yeah, and I feel kind of dirty doing it too.
I know, and I really thought about that one. The Rams are a team that I haven't been able to figure out yet. I had high hopes for them coming into the season with the defense that they had from last year, with the young talent at receiver and running back. The quarterback issue has just really decimated that team. They did get a win this past weekend against the Bucks, but I mean, it wasn't a great win. It was more of a toss of the midgets type of thing. They just happened to have more points at the end of the game. It wasn't really a victory. But I haven't really figured out the Rams yet, so for that reason, not to say I figured out the Cowboys, but Cowboys have shown me a little bit more this season than the Rams, so we'll go with them. Redskins at the Eagles. We both got the Eagles hands down on that. Texans at the Giants. I'm taking Houston. You're going to take your Giants. I may pick the Giants to go 0-16 this year. I'm not sure that I found a team yet that I think that the Giants can beat. We'll see if they continue to improve, but I certainly don't think it's going to be Houston this week.
Actually, so I think of all the teams that we've played so far, I think that Houston's probably the best chance we have because Houston's offense is kind of pathetic right now. Clowney's still out, right?
Yes, Clowney's going to be out for a little while.
See, I think of all the teams we've played in the last 3 weeks, I think this is probably this should be the team that on paper we should beat.
J.J. Watt is going to knock Eli Manning out and usher in the Ryan Nassib era. And then he's going to go and play on the other side of the ball, and he's going to throw a touchdown to himself, because it seems like that's the progression for J.J. Watt at this point. The dude is absolutely crazy. To see him catching a touchdown pass this past weekend was nuts. It's crazy what this guy's capable of. All right, Vikings at the Saints. We both have the Saints. Titans and Bengals. We both have the Bengals. Ravens at Browns. We both are taking the Browns. Look at that. We're both getting on Cleveland bandwagon right now.
Yeah, kind of hard to believe, right? After three seasons of making fun of them.
Look, man, I like Mike Pettine. I like Brian Hoyer. I like some of the things they're doing. Andrew Hawkins is on my fantasy team. Good things are happening in Cleveland right now. Detroit and Green Bay, or Green Bay at Detroit. I think we're split on that one. I'm taking Detroit. You have the Packers. Indianapolis at the Jags. This is probably the lock of the week. We both got Indianapolis. Jaguars, just nothing's going right there. Absolutely nothing. Raiders at Patriots. Speaking of a team where nothing ever goes right, we both, I believe, have New England. Yep, looked at New England on that. San Francisco at Arizona. A very, very nice divisional matchup. 4 o'clock game on Sunday. Should be one of the net. Oh, no, maybe not. Let me get to the next one. But Niners at the Cardinals. Let's see. I got the Niners. We both have Niners on that one. For some reason, this is a 4:25 game and not Sunday Night Football. I don't understand why. But it's Broncos at Seahawks. It is a rematch of the Super Bowl. This makes no sense to me to not be a nationally televised game. I don't get it. Either way, we're split on this. I have Denver. They are looking for retribution. They've definitely got to find a way to make up. It's not going to obviously make up for losing that badly in a Super Bowl, but they're going to come out and they're going to give it everything they have to try to win this game. I have Denver in this. You are taking the Seahawks. Finishing up the afternoon games is Chiefs at the Dolphins. I have Kansas City. You have the Dolphins on this one. Dolphins, they're 1-1. They got up for New England week one. Beat them pretty not handily, but showed some aggression, showed some good things, beat them, and then lost to Buffalo this past week. One of the only teams in the league so far to play two divisional games already. They're 1-1. The Chiefs, I just don't see them losing again. The Chiefs are a very talented team. Even with the loss of Jamal Charles, I think Dwayne Bowe is going to come back pretty strong, and Niall Davis is going to really show the world what he can do. I got the Chiefs in this one. They're not... They may not be as good as they were last season, but they're not a bad team. They're still going to be a competitor and a team that's going for a wild card spot come the end of the season. So we're split on this one. Sunday Night Football, Steelers at the Panthers. Again, this should not be Sunday Night Football. It should be the Broncos and Seahawks, but what do I know? We both have Carolina. They're just a better all-around team, better offense, better defense. Just Carolina's better. And then Monday Night Football, the Jets and the Bears from MetLife Stadium. Taking my Jets, because they're my Jets. I don't know how they're going to do it, but they're the Jets, and they're going to find a way. And you're taking the Bears on that, as probably 99.99% of America is. And that's about it. We'll be back next Tuesday night with an all-new episode of The Fifth Down. As always, we ask you to follow us on Twitter. We're at Fifth Down NFL. Like us on Facebook, it's facebook.com/fifthdownpodcast. And check out the website, fifthdown.org. Please donate if you do enjoy the show and anything that you see. Any questions, comments, tweet at us, throw it on the website. We'll mention it on the show. We'll respond to you. And then we do tweet live every Sunday throughout the games. All things going on all week. And the Twitter handle is at fifthdownNFL. And we'll be back next Tuesday with an all-new episode of The Fifth Down.